All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is April the 28th, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. Just came upstairs, just finished doing a nice run this morning. Feeling good. Trying to stay with it. Started running last week, been feeling good. Having a little bit of a rib back issue. I don't know what it is. It feels like, you know what it feels like? A side stitch. It feels like a side stitch when you're running and you're just not getting enough air down into the lung. And it is kind of hurting. It's been hurting for a couple days and I didn't realize what it sort of felt like until I just ran. And it was, of course, felt like I had a side stitch. Felt like I had a side stitch in the middle of the night. And didn't do anything about it. You know, like you get a cramp in your leg and then the next day your leg is really sore. Well, that's what it feels like. But anyway, it's not too bad. Thought we'd come upstairs, see if we can do a podcast. Check in with the folks, see what's happening. It's been, I don't know when I did the podcast last. It's been a few, I suppose. Everything's been going well. Been hitting up some meetings. Had some friends and family over on Sunday for dinner. And, you know, just dealing with a good friend of mine. It's really a bummer. You know, going through one of these unfortunate domestic situations. And, you know, the verdict's in and the outcome is not favorable to him. A lot of money's being issued out. A lot of back money being issued out, which is interesting. I still can't figure it out. I really cannot. Unless there's just more to this story and I just am not getting it. But from the part I'm getting, I don't get it. And he came over on Sunday, and he's just bummed out. He is bummed out. I get it. You know, it's called feeling hopeless, right? When someone tells you what they're going to do, and there isn't a damn thing you can do about it. It's hopeless, powerlessness. And I don't think anything feels worse than being powerless to somebody else. And I think that's how he's feeling, and I absolutely get it. I do. I have gone through these moments when I woke up the first time without a family, and I was told that we would be getting a divorce, and I will be paying for this, and I'll be paying for that. And I was like, nah, I was out of my mind. Right, I'd become a victim. And then I had a conversation with my sponsor, and he reminded me, you know, this is all your fault, Tom. You know, everything that you're going through is your fault, you know, and that sometimes doesn't, I don't like to hear that either. But on that day I heard it and it was a reminder, you know, if my feet were there, I played a role. And I keep asking my buddy, is there more to this story? Why? You know, this person left, walked out, left him with everything, all the bills and the responsibilities and in my mind, I'm like, yeah, and I've shared, I've been through a couple divorces. It's not easy, but, you know, both of the divorces I've been through, we were able to, you know, split everything 50-50. We do everything 50-50. There's no child support. There's no alimony. I think my second wife might have even made more money than me, but it was never even an option. I don't know why. Maybe because both of us worked and wanted to work. I'm not sure the person that's in his life wants to work. But it was just never an option. And we have done fine and we've had a great relationship. And I always tell him, man, there is days after this, right? You can't just become so upset and incensed that you can't move forward, right? You have to, you know, you got to find the light. You got to see the horizon. You got to draw your line in the sand. You've got to figure out that moment. Where you got to, you know, pull up your pants, pull up your bootstraps, right? And just take it on. You know, I've said it before. I'll say it again. You know, losing everything does suck. But the reality is it's how we handle it on the other side.
Machines that can know. medicine supposed to design to make you high. I'll be a lonesome with words for a feeling and all I've discovered.
Pillar of Davidson. It's the worst part about it is I've been having this conversation with my buddy, and I just tend to use the perspective of recovery and the 12-step program, and he's not in a 12-step program, and he's not in recovery. In fact, he's one of those normal people that tends to handle all the things that I used to enjoy, that I don't get to enjoy now, or I don't want to enjoy. So using that philosophy, unfortunately, isn't really working for him, and so he is just bummed out. Like I said, they came over this weekend, and he was moping, and I just was, you know, and I sort of lose, I don't know, I lose direction with people like that. I guess I'm just used to talking to people in recovery because there's always that over, you know, the umbrella problem of alcoholism. And it's easy to remind ourselves that, you know, that's what got us here. But for a person like that, you know, I don't have a lot of fingers to point and why he's where he's at. But, you know, it's just kind of a rough weekend for that. And I just sort of now I'm like, I don't want to sort of hang out with him. I'm having this other weird kind of feelings. And, you know, he needs friends. And, yeah. But anyway, it is Tuesday. Back to work this week. It's been a slow few weeks. You know, I shared about my taxes. I got a lot of tax money back, which was grateful. And I've sort of, you know, been in sort of a pink fog because of that. Like, woohoo, I'm rich, which I'm not. Right? Give me 10 bucks, I think I'm rich. But, you know, my business has been slowing down a little bit. I don't know. It's this time of the year for one. Spring break is always a hit to the business. But, you know, it's probably the economy. You know, I know that I'm not spending as much money. Gas is high, you know, groceries are high. We know all about that. And so, it's just, and I'm, you know, back to work this week. I thought I had a busier week. It's still a little slow. And, but we'll take it. I am working today. But I was thinking, you know, I went to a couple meetings. You know, one of the interesting things about, especially like doing this podcast, you know, it's not like, you know, new chapters are downloaded of this program. It's not like there's updates. There's not like there's additions, you know, part one, part two. It is what it is. You got the big book and you got the 12 and 12, and that's it, right? It's a program that has been written many, many years ago, and people obviously have written other stories, you know, like As Bill Sees It, and even though Drop the Rock is not AA, you know, approved, whatever you call it. There's a lot of different other books kind of, you know, talking about the program. But for the program itself, it's the big book and you have the 12 and 12, which are the steps and the traditions. And so, you know, it's the same book I started reading the day that I walked in as the book that I read the other day at the Monday morning, at the Monday noon meeting, right? The only thing that changes in this program is me, or the only thing that's hopefully will change is me, because the program isn't going to change. You know, I went to a meeting yesterday, Monday, yeah, and it was on the promises. And I've shared many times in this program or in this podcast, I am not a huge fan of the promises meeting. I think the promises are great. You know, it comes after the eighth and ninth step. You know, I've always kind of felt like it was, you know, AA's way of having the promises as a really a suggestion, like, oh, this problem hasn't come true, or this promise hasn't come true. Usually, what is it that I actually need to work on for something like that to come true? You know, one of the promises, my favorite promise, intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. And I was always baffled by my life and my outcomes and, you know, the predicaments that I got myself into. Why me? How come? Why me? My mom used to say it, you know, you just got bad luck in September. September was always a bad month. And, but intuitively, you know, how to handle situations is one of those things where it's about becoming accountable. Right, about willing to take the blame, willing to take a look at myself to figure out the part that I played. So one, it doesn't happen again. And two, right, I don't have to be a victim. And I was great at being a victim. You know, I shared when I crashed into that sign in San Diego and I jumped out and I said, who the fuck put this sign here? Right. It had nothing to do with me drinking and driving. It had nothing to do with me driving erratically. You know, that night I had gotten in a big fight with my father. I mean, a real fisticuff. And ended up in my car, peeling out of the driveway, down Via de la Via, onto the 5, going to top speed like a maniac, pulling off on the exit ramp, throwing it sideways under the underpass, losing control, sliding out of my seat because I didn't have a seatbelt, and hitting a on-ramp sign. And getting out of the car and thinking, who put this freaking sign here, right? None of those things that I had done were the problem. It was whoever put the sign there. And that's how I spent my whole life. And I see that happening with a lot of people. You know, whether it's the, you know, the economy, groceries. You know, I sort of had a little bit of a tough conversation with my son about groceries. You know, he's obviously in college. You know, his philosophy or his outlook or his look on life from his college life is a little different than from my, you know, older man life. And, you know, he's talking about the price of food and how expensive it is. And I'm like, you know, he's also part of the generation that'll spend $30 on DoorDash, right, to have the food delivered. You know, they'll take a $15, $10, $12 meal and have it delivered, plus tip and delivery, you're looking at about $30, right? And, you know, being pissed that things are so expensive. You know, I told him last night, I go, that's why we cook, right? That's why I cook food. I said, try raising 3 kids. You know, it's brutal. And especially when they want to all go out to dinner and they all want to order sodas. And I'm like, you know, if we would, it wouldn't be such a big deal if I wasn't paying $15 for a bunch of sugary drinks, right? But it is what it is, and it's a choice that I make. You know, it's something that I go through in my head prior to even going, knowing that they're going to want sodas, and I'm going to have to be all right with paying for it, or I have to say something. And like my middle son's like, he's sort of in this health kick now, so he's drinking water, which I love. And it's, you know, it's fine, but you know, I know what I'm getting myself into. It's not a shock. And, you know, there was a time in my life, I think I remember I had a big F-250, so it was probably 22 years ago, and gas was $4. I remember when gas went to $4, and I had this big truck, and I was like, oh my God, how am I ever going to do this? And so I traded it in and got a little Mazda 3 wagon that got like $25 fill up and, you know, 50 miles to the gallon. It was great. I made, you know, not everybody can do that. I don't know. I guess I was lucky I could do that in the first place. But, you know, we have to adjust. But, you know, it still falls on my shoulders. It's still my decision. I can't do things. And then when the outcome is tough, you know, blame other people. And I've learned that through this program. You know, intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. Intuition. Someone said the definition of intuition is easy thought, like thought is easy or something like that. I call it more from God or from the heart. But the first, every situation that I get in today, and hopefully there's not many, but every situation I get in today, immediately I think, what part did I play? You know? I remember when my first wife and I got divorced and we split up and, you know, we sold the house, or we had to sell the house because we wanted to, or she wanted to, you know, split the value and take her part and give me my part, you know, which makes sense. And of course, you know, that was at a time when like the housing market here was at its highest. The value of that house was ridiculous. It was right, you know, I don't know what had happened, the housing crash or something, and people were moving to the beach and it was just ridiculous. And I was like, this isn't what this house was worth a month or 2 months ago. And my buddy Matt said, pay her the money. It will not matter in 5 years. And I'm like, you're crazy. It will not matter in 5 years, and not only will it not matter, you will have a much better relationship. He's like, you know, Tom, life will go on after this. You may not think so, but we move on. And you may not see it now, but eventually you will appreciate having a decent relationship with your ex. And it will make life easier for your child, most importantly. But eventually it'll make it easier for you too. And I just couldn't wrap my hand around that, or wrap my arms around that idea. But I did it. I paid her. And I know I've shared when we were, you know, we had agreed 50-50 on daycare. And then she comes to me one day and says, I do not need it anymore. So if you need it, that's on you. Once again, I was out of my mind and pissed and a victim. She had made a deal. And she hadn't really made a deal. We had made just an agreement, but, you know, there was no rules. And she started dating some guy and he's like, you don't need to work. And I was annoyed, one, that I'd lost my wife, right? Two, I'd lost my wife to another guy who was treating her better, right? Three, he was not only treating her better, she didn't even have to have a job. And four, I was having to pay for all of daycare. I was a victim of four different things. One, two, three, four. How many of them were my fault? One, two, three, and four. Someone else that's close to my life was pointing out some of the behaviors of my ex-wife over the years. And I said, you know, before you get annoyed at her, you know, you have to remind myself that had I not had the drink, right? Because prior to picking up a drink, when her and I had met, I was sober. You know, we went to the gym. We were running. We were living a life, going out to dinner. Both of us had a job. We were doing great. And then I decided to have a drink. Not because I love drinking, it's because I didn't care, right? I was 4 years into recovery and hadn't really worked a step, hadn't really worked a program, had only been in the program really for the social side of it, right? Making friends, feeling good, looking good. But eventually, you know, those demons would show up. And when they did, and it offered to have a drink, instead of saying, am I going to ruin this amazing marriage? Am I going to hurt this beautiful woman? Am I going to destroy our future? I didn't think of any of those things. I said, let's do it. And that's what I did. And slowly but surely, I would wake up to an empty house and I would be like, I can't believe she did this. But you got to find, you know, I have got to find that intuition, right? Intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. Up until that point, I was baffled. Until my buddy Matt said, do it, because it won't matter in 5 years. And that was really the beginning of accountability, honesty, and thoroughly. And I talked about that the other day, that word thoroughly. You know, I don't think there's a more important word in recovery than thoroughly. Because I, you know, in that first 3 years, I had stopped drinking. I had changed all the things on the outside, but I had done nothing on the inside. You know, no one had I failed to mention that, you know, my first wife I had taken hostage because another girl had broken up with me. You know, there's a friend in my life that I feel like sort of going through that. And I might be wrong. I don't know. Maybe a lot of relationships start off like that. I mean, that's how that relationship started off, and it actually ended up being okay. I think in the end I had a bit of a resentment because I wasn't honest about that, which is, you know, weird too, but like I say to everybody, because it seems like a bunch of people I know are going through divorce, you know, be humble, be kind, have grace. None of this will matter in 5 years. And like in my situation with my two ex-wives, we have good relationships, right? Very good relationships. I don't talk to my first wife very much because our son's older now and we don't really have a lot or really any need to have a conversation. But I just did her mom's hair. Right, I'm still doing my first ex's mother-in-law's hair. She actually went somewhere else and they screwed up her hair, and she called me. She's like, Tom, can you fix my hair? And I was like, yeah, why didn't you just call me in the first place? She's like, I don't know. And it's funny because my ex-wife told her, call Tom. Right? My son told his grandma, call my dad. And my ex-father-in-law told my ex-mother-in-law, call Tom. And so she did, and she called me the other day, and she goes, I just want to tell you, my hair is beautiful. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, you know, these are the things, you know, if I can't find accountability, if I can't listen to that intuition, if I, you know, if I pay that money back in whatever 20-something years ago and then, you know, continue to call her a bitch and a fucking, you know, all these bad names and have this bad attitude, the only people that are affected are my kids. Those people, their family, right? You know, when I talked about that one day, you know, addiction isn't just me being an addict. It's the four people around me, right? Or my parents and family, and then the four people that they know, and it's a spreading disease. So many people are affected by my behavior, or so many people are affected by my ability to be accountable and not be a victim and, you know, change my ways and be a better dad and a better ex-husband. You know, I've said before, I may not have been a great husband, but I'm going to be a great ex-husband. And I've tried to do that, you know, whether it's with her or with my middle son's mom, who, you know, we have a great relationship. Really good. Like I tell my buddy Ben, or my friend, I go, this is going to be one day you're gonna have a new person in your life. Your ex is gonna have a new person in their life, and you're gonna try to be, you know, appreciative, and instead of looking at all the things I'm not getting, I try to look at all of the wonderful things that our children get through being positive and, you know, trying to work through these tough times. It's really, but it just takes time, right? There's not like a new chapter that's been released in AA saying, oh, we got to look at accountability again. No, it's in there, right? And I shared I don't like the promises meeting because that's an alcoholic's good idea to have that meeting. And, you know, everybody that, for me, I remember the promises. I was always like, oh, I want these promises. But when you go, for me at least, once you've been through the first 9 steps, getting the promises isn't as important. If we have honestly, you know, thoroughly worked the eight, at least up to the 9th step in this program, honestly, thoroughly, you know, really worked at it, the promises aren't as important. You know, it's not like, all right, I made it. Now give me what I get. It's not how it works. You know, it's the same thing at, you know, at if you've worked the 12 steps of the program thoroughly and honestly, a coin isn't really that big of a deal. I don't know. But that's what's going on. I thought I would just come up and talk about that. The program doesn't change. I have to change is really, I guess, to sum it all up. These are the same words I started reading, you know, 32 years ago. And nothing's changed. The only thing that has to change is me. And, you know, as soon as I can get around to doing that, the better off my experience in this program and the better off my experience in this life is. So, all right, let's do the reading here. Let's see if I can Find it. Daily Reflections. All right. Two magnificent standards. All AA progress can be reckoned in terms of just two words, humility and responsibility. Our whole spiritual development can be accurately measured by our degree of adherence to these magnificent standards. Yes. Two magnificent standards. Yeah. All AA progress can be reckoned in terms of just two words, humility and responsibility, right? Yeah. You know, accountability, thoroughness. To acknowledge and respect the views, accomplishments, and prerogatives of others, to accept humility, to practice the principles of AA in all my affairs, guides me to be responsible. Honoring these precepts gives credence to Tradition 4 and to all other traditions of the fellowship. Alcoholics Anonymous has evolved a philosophy of life full of valid motivation, rich and highly relevant principles and ethical values, a view of life which can be extended beyond the confines of the alcoholic population. To honor these precepts, I need only to pray and care for my fellow man as if each one were my brother. That's right. That is right. Well, listen, I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me share. And I hope everyone has a great day, and I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Taking our time moving shit from this holy slide. Words for feeling and all I've discovered.